Welcome back to TechNet Radio. Blaine Barton welcomes cloud architect for Skylera, Don Noon, into the show as they kick off their real-world Azure series by discussing Windows Azure and its infrastructure as a service platform. In today's episode, they discuss a scenario which details how you would migrate and manage a classic three-tier application to Windows Azure. Blaine, the mic is yours.
Hello and welcome to IT Time, TechNet Radio. I'm your host, Blaine Barton, a senior IT pro evangelist with Microsoft. I'm here in my Tampa office with one of our guests. He's a new guest on the show. His name is Don Noonan. He's a software architect for Blackbaud, the creator of the popular Smart Deploy Disk Imaging Solution. He has authored numerous technical publications, presented at major conferences, as a whole product line of things he's done with companies, including Citrix. He has spent some time with Boeing, the Boeing aircraft company, Intel, Microsoft. So this is great. You know, Don is also the founder of Skylera, a company focusing solely on accelerating cloud adoption, and specifically with Windows Azure. So Skylera provides a really a unique, I think, blend of architectural and software development services that help, you know, kind of eliminate people that are working with cloud services to eliminate those roadblocks and quickly migrate workloads to the cloud. So welcome, Don. How you doing, bud?
I'm doing great, Blaine. Thanks. Thanks for having me.
You bet. It was great meeting you at TechEd back while in Orlando, and great to have you on IT Time on the radio show here. So before we get started with Azure and the foundation, you know, laying the foundation for Windows Azure and infrastructure as a service, I always ask my guests two very special questions to kick off the show. And the first one was, and you got to think back a little bit, what was your first computer experience?
Let's see. My parents bought me a Texas Instruments TI-99-4A, complete with the tape recorder, literally an audio tape recorder, but it was able to suck up basic programs and then replay them by pressing the play button, if you will. So that was my first, real computer. And then after that, just upgraded to the TRS-80, which was a Radio Shack machine.
Nice. And then you went big, or you're going to go home, right? You went with the EverX 286 system.
That's right.
You went big. Yeah, you went with the hard drive, man. That's pretty cool. So great. So I guess, you know, the next question is, how'd you get started in IT? What brought you to this whole cloud service thing?
Yeah. Wow, it's been a while, but basically right out of school, went to work for the Boeing company, took a job in IT there, got interested in PCs, networking, Windows, and then I ended up working on desktop deployment, getting them upgraded back then from 98 to Windows 2000, kind of went through the whole Windows OS tree there, started working on server side, mounting blades and installing Server 2003 at that time. And got really interested in just overall IT automation, how to take a bunch of repetitive processes and people and turn those into scripts and management tools. And so that kind of inspired me to basically create a company called Smart Deploy, where we basically provided a single image concept. So rather than build images based on hardware, you build images based on software. So you could have kind of a portable Windows image with all of your suite of applications and then not worry about how to manage device drivers, things like that. So over time, obviously with cloud appearing, got really interested in storage virtualization, again, deployment, virtual machines, and so now we're building tools around basically desktop and server deployment using cloud rather than on-premise infrastructure.
Yeah, and you know, with you being a software architect and really having the skills around the development services of helping, you know, companies really bring their and migrate their work on-premise or colo into Windows Azure. So that's great. You know, what we're doing here on the show is bringing you on because you have a lot of real-world experience out there in Azure. And there's a lot of different working parts, a lot of different components that need to be taken care of when you're doing the architectural software development overview. So, well, let's just dive right in. Let's start with Windows Azure Infrastructure as a Service. Let's, Don, let's take us through the day in the life of Don Noonan as far as, what are the components, what are the working parts?
Perfect. So, Blaine, here's an example of a company that had basically a classic mobile application where they have kind of their future version on .NET and platform as a service, but of course their bread and butter today is selling more and more copies of their existing product. And so they had a pretty complex on-premise IT management setup for this particular application. They had a bunch of servers that they managed. They had to roll all those versions of software. They had kind of people on 24/7 pagers. And so when they talked to Microsoft about moving to Windows Azure, of course, the first thought was infrastructure as a service. So what I typically do when we have these types of, I guess you'd call them proof of concepts, is to divide the existing solution into different blades or different areas, functional groups. So in this diagram, it's a very simple diagram, but what we have is a set of virtual machines up in Windows Azure, and we've separated them by major role. So on the right there, typically what I do is I set up a backend or a management network that contains things like Active Directory, you know, basically core services that the rest of the system relies on. And so, Blaine, I know you were curious about availability sets and virtual networks in the real world. So in this scenario, it's a very basic implementation of availability sets where each one of these pairs of servers, we use the Windows Azure feature called availability sets. In Windows Azure speak, availability set just means that there's a promise at the data center or the hypervisor level that one of the servers will always remain active even through hypervisor servicing. In other words, when we need to deploy patches to the Windows Azure platform, if two VMs or more are part of an availability set, it simply means that you can guarantee that one of those VMs will always be on while the other host is being serviced. So in Active Directory sense, obviously we want authentication and all the services provided by Active Directory to be highly available. So in this deployment, we decided let's put the directory services in an availability set. Two small domain controllers, and that's as simple as that. For other roles,
kind of makes sense there, because when you talk about an availability set, the way I've been explaining it is just that, you know, it's actually a redundancy copy of what you have currently running in that availability set. You know, we're taking the assumption that Windows Azure is always running, right? So as far as a disaster with inside the cloud services, you know, that's pretty much taken care of by Microsoft to make sure that doesn't happen. But to guarantee that your particular instance is continuing to run, is, you know, in that availability set, that's really what we're talking about, right?
Absolutely. You know, we want to be able to maintain, obviously, a hypervisor, make sure that it has all the latest patches, but we also want to make sure that individual services or, you know, every customer's cloud service to remain up and running through those maintenance windows. So availability sets lets us do that and logically group resources within a given cloud service. Of course, there isn't any magic within the guest machine or within each VM. It's literally just saying that the host, the compute resources for that VM will remain there. So when we talk about availability sets with relation to things like traditional SQL, so that's the next one over. So we have the database services, and it does have availability sets wrapped around it, but to be fair, availability sets doesn't provide magic SQL mirroring. You still have to have a witness and everything that you would normally do for SQL on-premise. But at least from availability set perspective, and we'll get into this in the portal, the platform is aware that we can't have both these boxes brought down for host maintenance. So we can get into more, you know, probably in another session about just database mirroring and other opportunities around SQL in Windows Azure IaaS. And then we have a management service. This is specific to their mobile solution. It's basically a place where customers can go and look at logs and activity. And then on the far left is their sync services. This is a custom C++ application where the mobile devices at the bottom there, when they run their mobile app, and they talk to the cloud service, this sync service is responsible for obviously syncing data between the phone and the backend database. So this is how I like to divide up in Windows Azure context, kind of grouping the machines, what the VMs, what roles they'll be playing, how the networks are laid out, And then when we get into more details about load balancers and Azure networking, you know, we can talk about how to lay those endpoints out and expose things that are either public facing or need to be maintained. So let's go ahead and jump into the portal. So here we are in the Windows Azure portal. And so some of the features, infrastructure as a service features, appear on the left here. So we're going to go ahead and take a look at some virtual machines that are members of an availability set like we showed in the diagram. So here's two domain controllers that are paired up. And in the portal, I can view the availability set that they're members of on the Configure tab. So I've simply just gone into the portal, picked virtual machines, and picked one of the nodes, the primary domain controller in this example. And then I click Configure. And right here it shows that it's part of an availability set called DC availability set. So again, this means that if through a maintenance window, there's a guarantee that either one of these nodes will always be available. And Active Directory obviously has built-in replication as part of its service. So there isn't anything we need to do additional when setting up high availability for Active Directory domain services. So we also talked about virtual networks and availability, or I'm sorry, and affinity groups. Let's talk about affinity groups really quickly here. So affinity groups, the way I like to think about it is it's a way that within a given Windows Azure data center to keep your resources close to each other. So it's a high-level container where your storage, your compute, all can be located closely when they're provisioned. So let's say that you set up a new cloud service in the East Coast data center and you want to make sure that the virtual machines that you spin up all talk to each other and are close to each other within that data center, because obviously data centers are large. You would first set up an affinity group. Once you have an affinity group, then you can build out things like the storage where your virtual hard disk will remain, any of your content. And then within an affinity group, you can have what's called virtual networks. So just like we divided up the server roles, I like to also divide up, basically subnet out the particular virtual network for a cloud service. There's lots of different reasons to do this, but some of the main reasons is from a security perspective, you may want services to be segregated and only the ports between those particular roles to talk to each other. That's common in large data centers and public cloud. So if you deploy VMs, you could have Windows firewall rules that say, I only want external servers to talk to me on port 443, or I only want SQL traffic to go from the middle tier to the database tier. So the nice part about Windows Azure Infrastructure as a Service is I can come in here and create my own networks. So in this case, I've created a management network, which has my domain controllers on it. And then this particular web service, each customer has their own appliance or their own instance of a virtual machine. So you can also take the model and segregate customers from each other or segregate services. So in this example, here's where we've got the management backend network, again, with domain controllers. This is very close to the picture that we showed earlier. Database backend, middleware, so whatever is happening in that classic or that legacy application in between the basically the web front end and the database, all four of these have their own subnet, so that in the future, obviously, we can have lots of hosts on each one of those subnets, but we can also segregate either for security reasons or performance reasons.
So great job, Don, of giving us this big picture, right? So the first thing we started with, you know, segregating the workloads. You see from the right-hand side of the taxonomy there, the directory services and Active Directory, you know, database services in the next pillar, management services in the next one, and then finally the sync services. And then wrapping around that, an affinity group, where we manage that, and then also around that becomes our virtual network. So, Don, let's take a look at building this out.
You got it. So what I'm going to do is basically show you the set of scripts that are associated with each one of these columns. So I've got loaded up a set of PowerShell scripts. These all are running against the management commandlets that come with Windows Azure Infrastructure as a Service. So what I like to do is break these chunks out into core infrastructure and then maybe back-end management servers like we talked about earlier, like Active Directory domain controllers, and then whatever the middleware tier is that makes that particular application work, and then finally the front end, in this case a SharePoint server, so whatever's public facing. So similar to how we subnetted the network out, this is the set of scripts that deploy those roles and services. So with create core infrastructure, every one of the scripts you'll see has a header. This is all the information that the management service in Windows Azure needs to prove who you are and to allow you to create, you know, provision objects in Windows Azure Infrastructure as a Service. The rest of it, though, are just variables that say, for this particular project, what are unique names for the objects that we're going to create. So in Create Core Infrastructure, just like we talked about, we want to start out by creating an affinity group in the data center that we desire. That's that logical container that keeps all of our future resources close for this particular cloud service, so they're not talking to each other from containers a football field away. And then we're going to go ahead and create our virtual network, so we're going to subnet out for the different roles. And then we're going to create our storage account. Same thing with the affinity group, so that all the storage that hosts the VHDs for the virtual machines or any other collateral for this service, we know will be close. The next part, and let's go into actually virtual network. There's only one line here, but that's because the PowerShell commandlets for Windows Azure IaaS supports the use of an XML file. So rather than having to type all the variables in, you can create an XML document that describes how that network's going to be set up. So just like we showed in the portal earlier with those four subnets, this is the file that creates it. The beauty of the portal is that you don't necessarily have to come up with this file by hand. You could hand create it once in the portal and then export it. So you'll see that in future sessions about advanced networking.
Are the scripts available, Don?
Yeah, so a lot of these, there's some pre-canned scripts at windowsazure.com. If you click on management and then you go to the PowerShell management commandlets, there's a lot of common scenarios that are covered there. We've been working with the Azure's team to get more scripts like this up there too after we go through these real world proof of concepts.
Fantastic.
So then now that we have kind of our foundation where we've got networking now, we have affinity groups, we've got our storage, it's time to actually deploy a VM. So in this case, I'm going to create the management service layer, which really just contains two domain controllers. So again, same header information. In fact, I can cut and paste it from other scripts. But this time, we're going to tell it that the default storage account to put new objects, let's say I create 5 VMs, and I want all those virtual hard disks to end up in the same storage account, you can actually, when you set what subscription you're acting against, you can include this at the end that says, okay, for any new objects, I want to make sure those VHDs end up in my storage account. If you don't do that, and if you have experience in the portal recently, if you create a VM, it creates a randomly generated storage account name. This way, you make sure that all of your resources are in the storage account that you want it to exist in. And so here's my two domain controllers. I'm just basically setting up some simple variables that say what's the name of the machine, how big is that instance, so we know that a small instance is a one core, 1.75 gigs of RAM. And this is the beauty also of Windows Azure, is that there's an existing gallery or catalog of pre-built virtual machines. So we're going to build this off of the existing Server 2008 R2 SP1 install. And then I tell it what subnet I want to target. So this was our first one. And here's the key to availability sets. This is obviously the name that we saw in the portal, but this is the actual commandlet that does the provisioning, new Azure VM config, and right here is where we use the availability set name. If I didn't include this, then obviously these machines would be independent of each other and they could be serviced at the same time. And since we want high availability around our domain controllers, we need to actually set an availability set for these. And that's about it. So I basically created my first one here, second one here. All I really changed was the computer name. I was able to pull from that same image. And then what we're going to do is at the end, once those VMs are created, we're going to create the cloud service for the management network. And all that really means is open a port so that I can go ahead and connect to those VMs to service them. Let's say I want to RDP to one of the domain controllers. Having a nice cloud service exposed will give it a DNS name that we can rely on regardless of where we are. So that's kind of the management layer. And then any of the middle tier, like we talked about for this particular one, they have a custom application for their middle tier. Again, setting up the instance size. In this case, we wanted a medium VM to run that workload. I want to target a different subnet. I do want to have an availability set to guarantee high availability. And then I want to create a new cloud service for that particular middle tier.
Yeah, that's awesome. I also noticed that you're using complex password requirements there.
Yeah, that is the default password. Yes, and the nice thing about the new Azure VM config command line is there's also the ability to specify not only what domain to join, but also what OU to join. So a lot of folks like to organize compute resources in Active Directory by putting, rather than just dropping every computer into the computer's default OU, you can specify the distinguished name, or basically the target OU name in the command line. And you can also do things like disable the local admin account after it's been joined to the domain, because obviously you get things like domain admins added to the. So that's best practice for sure, is to obviously disable a local admin account once the machine's been provisioned. So now we're at the database tier. Not much going on here except we've got a large instance size because we want that compute power there for SQL. And we're also adding a set of disks. So that's the other powerful thing about the new Azure VM config commandlet, is that on the fly, not only are we going to use a pre-canned image for the OS disk, but we can, at provisioning time, tell it that I want to add maybe a 100 gig LUN for data and a 50 gig LUN for logs. And you can even specify exactly where you want those to exist. So this is a real powerful feature of the PowerShell interface to Windows Azure IaaS, is the ability to add lots of disks. In fact, for a large or an extra large instance, you can add up to 16 data disks at 1 terabyte apiece. So in some of these real-world scenarios of migrating, let's say a large 4-terabyte SQL instance to IaaS, you can basically create, at a simplest level, create 4 1-terabyte disks and use Windows built-in dynamic disks to span those and create a single 4-terabyte volume in Windows Azure IaaS. So it's just a nice feature in PowerShell, is the ability to add external storage at deployment time, so they're ready to go when the VM's up and running.
Well, that's great. You know, I also noticed we put in, 2,400 commandlets for PowerShell for Windows Server 2012. So out of that set, how many are roughly for Windows Azure?
There's at least a couple hundred. The powerful thing, too, about Server 2012 having that many commandlets is that now, rather than just scripting the creation of, let's say, a domain controller, now we can do things like automatically have it promote it to a DC once that VM comes up. Pretty much anything that you can do by hand configuring Windows Server 2012, you can do by embedding a PowerShell script to do the rest of the provisioning. So it'll be nice to see when the Windows Azure IaaS portal extends things like this to talk inside the OS once it's up and running to do those post-provisioning tasks. So then the last one is kind of our web tier, which is, based on the diagram, the one that's public-facing. So we have, again, a large instance, but we're on our web subnet now. And then we have high availability, so 2 web front ends. And then I think that's about it. The thing that you can do in the portal and you can do in PowerShell is the ability to open ports up automatically for a cloud service. So if you have a web front end and you want people to talk to it on, let's say, 80 or 443, you can actually add those particular configurations as a command line. Just like we added disks, you can automatically add endpoints so that it's up and running, and when somebody contacts that web service, you don't have to manually configure what ports are open to that particular service.
So Don, this has been fantastic. A great overview, real life story of Don Noonan, or day in the life of Don Noonan, as far as setting up Azure for the first time, you know, pieces of or the components to building that out, you know, the affinity groups, the availability sets, the virtual networking around that. You broke it down. You went into some PowerShell. By the way, where can you get the Windows Azure commandlets and bring those into PowerShell into Windows Server 2012?
Yeah, you can just go to windowsazure.com and then click the manage icon and then choose Windows, and there'll be a section called virtual machines, how to, and then commandlets. So it's important, yeah, out of the gate you want to be able to install those PowerShell commandlets so that every one of those commands you saw today will be available at the command line.
Excellent, excellent. Well, hey, thanks, Don, for being on IT Time TechNet Radio in this episode. I know you're going to come back. We've got a little series going with you. Without any last comments?
Hey, Blaine, obviously I'm excited about Windows Azure, and I really appreciate the opportunity being on your show and looking forward to seeing you again.
Anytime. So once again, ladies and gentlemen, Don Noonan is a architectural software development engineer, if you will, the founder of Skylera, and it's always great to have you on the show. So with that, I'll close things up, and it's a wrap.